Today we start the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. In the fifth chapter, Krishna talked about Karma Yoga as being better. You want to complete writing this? Maybe you can write this, then we can start. Silent mode. Today we started the sixth chapter, and yesterday in the fifth chapter basically Krishna talked about how Karma Yoga can give the same fruits as Jnana Yoga but more easily. And so in that sense, in the hierarchy, he just puts aside Jnana Yoga, and from Karma Yoga onwards Krishna says how by fixing the mind first on Atma one can avoid bondage by knowing oneself to be Atma, and by fixing the mind on Paramatma one can become free from bondage and attain liberation. And in the progressive stage of Karma Yoga, one has to adopt some other process. So the future processes are Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So Krishna gives a glimpse of those two in the last three verses. 27-28 is Ashtanga Yoga, 29 is Bhakti Yoga. So now, what was spoken in 27-28 will be expanded in chapter 6. And what was spoken in 29 will be expanded in chapters 7 to 12. So now we start with the 6th chapter. So here Krishna will start again with emphasizing that initially one has to be inactive. Initially one has to avoid activity. Avoid inactivity. One has to avoid inactivity and do work. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Anashritah Karma Phalam Karyam Karma Karoti Yaha Sasanyasi Cha Yogi Cha Naniragnir Na Chakriyaha. So, lighting a fire refers to the yajnas which are compulsory for all householders. And we discussed earlier about the pancha paap that happened because of the pestle, the mortar, the broom, the fire and the pot. So for that, because of the pancha paap that happened, there is pancha mahayajna which is to be done. So now, that is for a householder. For one who is renunciated, he doesn't have to do that. But what Krishna is saying is that just by giving up the yajna, it is not that one becomes a renunciate. Same thing Krishna had taught him, na karmana anamaha, na ishkarmyam purushottam. So, one who is actually a yogi, now Krishna in this verse, he equates a yogi and a sannyasi. He is a sannyasi and he is also a yogi. Krishna earlier said that both the paths are same, but here both the practitioners are same also, he says. So, who is that? Anashrita karma phalam. We discussed how materialistic people take ashraya of the phal to be able to do the karma. Now, the dreaming of success is what enables them to do the work. So, a detached karma yogi is not attached to the fruits. He doesn't take shelter of the fruits. He seeks only the inner wisdom, the gyan that will come by the doing the duty in a detached way. So, sa sannyasi sa yogi cha. A sannyasi is one who gives up material desires. And Krishna is telling, our next verse will become clear, that even one cannot practice yoga unless one gives up material desires. And therefore, sannyasi and yogi is the same. So, now Krishna will introduce two stages, Aruruksha and Aruruha. As we introduce them, we'll discuss them. So, Prabhupada explains in the last line of the first paragraph, the loving entity who acts for satisfaction is the supreme whole and not for personal satisfaction is the perfect sannyasi and the perfect yogi. So, Prabhupada is explaining everything from the devotional point of view that ultimately yoga means to connect with Krishna, sannyas means to disconnect with Maya. So, in that sense, if we are acting for satisfaction of Krishna, we are acting in perfection. Yam sannyasamiti prahur yogam tam vidhi pandava naya sanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kashyana. So one can never become a yogi. So this question is very categorical. So now we know what is sense gratification, which is pious and impious, the sinful and pious sense gratification. So, karmata involves pious sense gratification, but karma yoga involves giving up even pious sense gratification. That is, the giving up sense gratification is what leads to the practice of yoga. Now, Krishna will talk, then Arjuna will say that, does that mean that one should never renounce the world at all? One should forever stay in the world only? Then Krishna will explain the next verse. Now, there are stages. Arurukshur munir yogam karma karana muchyate yoga arurhasya tasyaiva shamah karana muchyate. So arurukshu, let me that refers to the beginning stage. One, it's like if you take a ladder, one is trying to climb up the ladder. The Aruruha is one who has climbed the ladder. So the name of Lord Vishnu is Garuda Aruruha. One who is situated in Garuda. So Aruruha means one is situated. So if one is climbing up the ladder of yoga, then one can give up the work. So the Acharya explained that among the 8 stages of yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, the first 4, Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, they can be practiced even when one is in the world doing worldly activities. So karma yogi, while doing karma yoga, can do yam, niyam, asan, pranayam. But if he is in the world, he cannot do pratyahar. So aruruksha refers to the first 4 stages, yam, niyam, asan, pranayam. At that time, one can be aruruksha. And aruruksha means, once one has become fit for pratyahar, one is able to shut out the senses, sense objects outside, then one can go to the further stages. All of you know these 8 stages, isn't it? Yam, niyam. So, asan, pranayam, niyam, basically they are like rules, individual rules and social rules. So, asan and pranayam, you can understand this in different ways. Now, if you compare it with a cricket match. So, yam, niyam are the rules for individual discipline and rules for group discipline. Everybody has to act in a particular way. If a batsman, bowler is bowling and the batsman hits the ball and somebody is going to catch it, then the batsman goes and hits the bat, filled only with the bat.
so we know going left or right. So there are rules in there. So yam niyam.
And then the batsman also has a stance, you know, he stands. That is asana.
And then as the ball is being bowled, he inhales and exhales. So he discharge energy. That is the pranayama.
And then he shuts out all distractions.
You know, sometimes when the ball is bowling, if somebody is there behind the side screen, he says, no, I want that. Ball again. He says, satyahar. And then as the ball is coming, and there is dhyan, concentrating more, and the ball comes closer and closer, for more dharan.
And then he swings the ball, and it goes for a sixer. He says, samadhi.
So, in one sense, those eight processes are actually universal limbs of any activity. The point which I was illustrating is that they are not just isolated activities, or isolated limbs of some isolated activity, otherwise activity called yoga. Actually, in any team activity, these 6-8 rules are useful. In fact, they naturally apply.
So here, Krishna is telling that the first four are applied in the when the first four, one is in the Arudha stage. Now, when we come to the Arudha stage, Krishna will describe the next verse. Yada hinendriyartheshu nakarma svanu sachyate sarva sankalpa sanyasi yoga rudhastad ochyate.
The person is said to be irritating yoga when having wrong or material desires, he neither acts for self-realization nor engages in physical activity.
So now Krishna is saying three things over there. What is the first thing? Yadahina indriyartheshu. One is not attached to sense objects that one will get from. One is work. That means not attached to the fruits of the work. Yadahina indriyartheshu. Na karmasva anusajyate. Not even attached to a particular kind of work. And not even having desires. Sarva sankalpa sanyasi. So it's all of them are progressively deeper and deeper level. No attraction to sense objects for the enjoyment. No attraction to the work also to get sense objects. And no attraction to the desires. Then one is yoga arudha. So, it's a very advanced stage, and Vilde Vidya Bhushan describes that here Krishna is telling sarva sankalpa sanyasi. Krishna is not saying sarva karma sanyasi. Yet one has to give up desires. One doesn't necessarily have to give up work. When one has actually given up desires, then one can give up the work also. Then one can become qualified. So many people are, especially in Hindu society, many people when they become frustrated with life, they think I will become a renunciate. So they have not given up desires, but they want to give up work, they want to give up the duties and responsibilities. So Krishna is saying first one has to renounce desires. Then one can eventually renounce duties. Now as brahmacharis, we may not have renounced the desire completely, but at least the desire for sense gratification in the form of sex, but we have renounced the resolve to fulfill it. At least at a gross level, we control it and we don't indulge in it. And gradually, we are not cultivating the desire, we are trying to give up the desires. When the passions come, we try to fight them off. So now, after describing this, for coming to this stage, what is the main obstacle? That is the mind. So now Krishna will talk about the mind. Now, although this chapter is talking largely about Ashtanga Yoga, but it is talking about principles of sadhana which apply to all paths. And in fact, in no other chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks sadhana so systematically and deeply as he talks in this chapter. And that's why we have a lot of instructions of sadhana which Prabhupada gives in his purports also over here. So, now Krishna will start talking about the mind. Krishna will talk about the mind twice. Here he will talk once and then in response to Arjuna's question. In 35-36 verses he will talk.
Udhare dātmanātmānam nātmānam avasādayet ātmaivayātmāno bandhur Atmaiva Ripuratmanaha.
One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. Mind is a friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well.
So, Uddharet, Krishna is saying Uddhar. No, Uddhar means to deliver, to uplift. Avasadet means to degrade, or to go down. So, Krishna is saying about a contrast. So, basically, now the mind we discussed earlier is not alive, it is dead, in the sense that it is not made of any conscious matter, but it has its default scripts. Based on how we have acted, just like a computer has a default program that starts off, the mind also has its default scripts, which run automatically.
And if the mind is not controlled, those default programs will run towards sense gratification. Now it is described that once one comes to the asakti stage, now we have shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajan kriya, anartha nivritti, nishtha, ruchi, asakti. Once one comes to asakti stage, at that time, we just say sometimes when we are talking with somebody, we are talking, but suddenly our mind goes to sense gratification. So like that, for a person with asakti, he is doing some extra work, but his mind goes to Krishna automatically. So for him, it has become a default program to go towards Krishna. So we have examples of this in CC, that Mukunda Sarkar, he saw a peacock fan and suddenly his mind went so intensely towards Krishna that he completely fell unconscious in a trance and fell down, practically speaking. So that are the situations when the mind has become a friend. And just the smallest stimulus, the person is not even trying to think of Krishna, but the mind starts thinking of Krishna. For us, it's exactly the opposite. Even when we try to think of Krishna, the mind doesn't want to think of Krishna. And on the other hand, even when we don't want to think of Maya, the mind goes to Maya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes this position and he says that, you know, even if I see a wooden form of a woman or touch a wooden form, then also my mind gets agitated. So he's taking position of the conditioned soul. But that is so this is the default programming of the mind. So Krishna is telling that the mind is a tool, and we can use it to raise ourselves or degrade ourselves. And in the purport of Prabhupada quote, that ultimately what will cause attachment and degradation is whether it is attached to sense objects or detached from the sense objects. And here Krishna has not yet introduced himself explicitly. So he's just saying, you elevate or degrade. How to elevate, how to degrade, he's not telling so clearly. Of course, Prabhupada makes everything very clear in his purports. Now, as we know here, there is the word Atma 7 times. And it becomes a little confusing if we just use all the Atma to refer to the self itself. One should elevate the self and not degrade. One should elevate the self by the self and not degrade the self by the self. For the self is the friend of the self and the self is the enemy of the self. Who is the self? It is very confusing. So Prabhupada makes things easier for us to understand. And in this word, in this chapter, the word Atma will be used to refer to the soul, to the mind, and occasions to the super soul also. We'll discuss that as it comes along. Now Krishna will tell in the next verse, when is the mind of to elevate ourselves with the mind? What should we do? So you have to control the mind. Pandhuratma atmanastasya yenatmaivatmana jitaha anatmastu shatrutve vatetatmaiva shatruvat.
For him who has conquered the mind is the best friend. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy.
So now this idea of personifying the mind is very helpful for dealing with it. Now personifying means, the personification means something which is not living, but we treat it as living so that we can understand it better. So personifying the mind, just like now if I am speaking something. Now even if you trust me what I am speaking, still you will evaluate what I am saying. You will evaluate whether it makes sense or not. And only if it makes sense, then you will accept it. If not, maybe you will ask some questions or you will not accept it. So like that, Krishna is telling, evaluate your mind also. Treat the mind as a person and evaluate what it is saying. Does it make sense? And when it starts speaking things which make sense, then we understand it will become our friend. As long as it starts speaking nonsense, then understand it is not our friend. But the mind is so subtle and so sinister that it just keeps poisoning our minds. So the ideal example of how the mind poisons, how the mind is the enemy, is Mantara and Kaikeyi. Now, Ayodhya is like our heart. Kaikeyi is like the living entity. And Mantara is the mind. So, you know, Lord Ram is the Lord in our heart. He's there, but what happens is, just because of the effect of the mind, we start thinking that the Lord is our enemy. The Lord is opposing my sense gratification. The Lord is opposing my happiness. And we exile the Lord from our heart. So, or now, if you look at the Sri Sampradaya Acharya explained, the nice insights. They said that Mantara made two mistakes. Kaikeyi made two mistakes. First was that he submissively heard the Mantara. And if we read the Ramayana, we don't have the time to go on the full pastime now. But initially she is very happy. Where Mantara comes and tells that Rama is going to be commanded. She says, you have a necklace actually. He says, what good news you have brought. And Kaikeyi, Mantara throws down like, you stupid lady, don't you understand what is happening?
and slowly, one by one, he's, Kaikeyi is not ready to believe her at all. He says, no, if Dashrath had no ill intentions, why is he doing the coronation when he has sent your son away? And that one fact jars her. Why? And then Mantaraya sees that she has got her. She starts poisoning more and more. And by the end of that, she's completely turned around. And she just is ready to do whatever she says, although it causes her so much sorrow. And although it causes everyone sorrow, but she has become steel-framed. She has become steel-framed, and later on, you know, when the mind catches a person, you know, one has emotions only in relation with that particular infatuation of the mind. And one becomes desensitized to everything else. So, when Sita is about to go out, at that time what happens? Kaikeyi very maliciously says that, you know, they are going to be living as ascetics, they should not wear these royal robes. Get them ascetic robes. And now Ram and Lakshman had worn ascetic robes earlier, but Sita doesn't know what to do with the robes. So then, Mantaraya very wickedly says, I will help you, teach you how to wear it. And then, at that time, Vasishtha Muni gets so angry. And he says, doesn't your heart break at least now to see this tender bodied princess having to wear ascetic garb? She's completely frozen. And then, when finally Lord Ram is about to go, Dashrath Maharaj gets very angry. He said that, you know, Ram, if you are going to the forest, I will also come with you. Not only I will come with you, you know, our whole army, our whole treasury will come with you. And we will convert the forest into Ayodhya, Ayodhya into a forest. And let Kaikeyi rule the forest with her son. So Kaikeyi gets very angry. He says, you promised me a flourishing kingdom, not a forest. Ram will go with nothing. So then, when she speaks like that, Dashrath Maharaj just falls unconscious. And even at that time, her heart doesn't shake even a little. Although everybody is crying. But eventually when Bharat comes back, and when Bharat comes back, still that bubble, I don't know what I am doing is good. You see, once the mind subordinates the intelligence to its own purpose, you know, once we rationalize, you know, rationalize, you have alternate spelling of that. Rationalize. RATRNOLLIES. So once we rationalize, then what happens? Nothing else made sense to her. So when Bharat came also, she was very happy. Oh, Bharat. Bharat asked, where is my father? Normally my father is there to welcome me. And then she says, very as if pretending to be sad, that destination which has to befall all living beings, that has befallen him. He has gone to the next world. And now you have to become the king. She says, oh, Dashrath, Bharat doesn't even hear the second part. He's shocked. He's passed away. He falls on the ground, starts crying. And then he says, alas, Ram was so fortunate that he was at least there by my father's side when he departed. I am so unfortunate that as a son I was not there with my father at the last moment. What are the last instructions that the father gave to Ram? Surely my father must have remembered me and given me some instructions. What did he speak? What were his last words? So Kaikeyi very steel-heartedly says, speaking, oh Ram, oh Lakshman, oh Sita, how fortunate are those who will be able to see you. And she's thinking, he was all the more bewildered. He says, Ram and Lakshman are not there. And he explains, you're not. And then she had to explain everything. He says, actually, they had all made a conspiracy to strip you of the kingdom, and I did all the things. And as Bharat hears this, he's completely horrified. And he can't believe anything. He says that if you had not been my mother, I would have killed you today. If you're a woman, I will not kill you, but I disown you as my mother. And Kaikeyi starts saying, actually, I was doing everything for you. I did everything for you. He said, no, you did not do anything for me. You did everything for your own selfishness. And just walks out. And according to Anand Ramayana, you know, during the 14 years, Bharat does not refer to Kaikeyi as mother at all. He says, Maharani Kaikeyi. Queen Kaikeyi. So Kaikeyi says, I am your mother. He says, my mother was a very loving lady. Queen Kaikeyi killed my mother. So at that time, when Kaikeyi is rejected by Bharat, at that time the bubble that she has built bursts. And then she realizes, what have I done? How did I do it? It was a complete spell of insanity that possessed me. So So her first mistake was that she submissively heard the heard mantra. The second mistake was she did not hear anyone else. She did not consult anyone else to before making a decision, and after making a decision, when others tried to offer, she did not hear anyone else. So you know, it's best if you could avoid the first only. We avoid hearing the mind. But because the mind is always there with us, it's sometimes not possible to, you know, we say we neglect the mind, but the mind is always there with us. We can't get rid of the mind. So the mind is there. Sometimes the mind just speaks the same thing again and again and again and again. Then, rather than acting on the mind, we need to consult somebody else. And you know, when we say we should have strong devotee association, strong devotee association doesn't just mean that we strongly embrace each other or something like that. Strong means that, you know, if somebody speaks strongly to us, that doesn't break the relationship. Generally speaking, what happens, ordinary people, see, our mind is like a mirror, like a prism or a lens through which we see everyone else. If somebody says this, Prabhu, can you do this service? You always think, because you know, this person doesn't want to do service, that's why he's telling me to do the service. Now, he's lazy and he wants to do me to do a lot of work. Normally, we see everyone through our mind's lens. But there should be at least one devotee in our life whom we can see outside our mind's lens. You know, okay, my mind is saying like this, but this devotee is saying like this. That means there should be some devotee, our counselor, our spiritual master, our authority, somebody whom we can trust more than our mind. Normally, we will see everything through the lens of our mind and we can't avoid it. But at least some person, okay, your mind is saying like this, but this devotee is saying like this. Now, let me see. Let me evaluate what the mind is saying. So actually, it's only when we are in the association of good devotees, then we can catch the mind tricking us. So otherwise, the mind tricks us and we don't realize it only. And we just go on that spell of the mind, just like sometimes you've seen in some old stories, there's a magic carpet. So you sit on the magic carpet and suddenly the carpet starts moving. And it starts moving, and then there's some nice wind is coming and you feel it's flying. And then the person is lost and he opens his eyes, hey, where have I come? You know, so like that, we sit on the mind, we relax in the mind is just carrying us one by one, little one step by step by step by step. And suddenly, hey, what did I do? Why did I do that? So we just get completely carried away by the mind. So, to be able to conquer the mind is a long way away. But at least to control the mind means that as much as possible, we try to avoid hearing the mind. But if the mind is just forcing again and again certain things, then we need an alternative to the mind. Okay, the mind is saying things are like this, but is there another way of looking at it? Then we hear from some devotees. And if we can, generally, it's not very easy to have such close friends whom we can trust so closely. So it may take years, sometimes decades. But then the alternative is, we hear from Guru Sadhu Shastra very sincerely. Not just for information, but for guidance. Then we will find that Krishna, ultimately the Super Soul, wants to guide us. So he will guide us. Then he will be able to see through the mind, through the mind's tricks. Otherwise the mind is very insidious. Very insidious. Insidious means very cunning and treacherous. So it promises us happiness, but it just drags us away. Slowly, 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 slowly. So, many times we see that sometimes there are some devotees who are very nicely practicing, but suddenly something happens and they go away or they change their ashram or whatever. And if you look back, everything has a reason. But the essential point is this, one starts listening to the mind. I start listening to the mind and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the mind starts taking control. And once the mind has taken control, sometimes it's very difficult to fight off the mind. It's very, very difficult to fight off the mind. So that's why it's best if we can avoid the mind having its influence on us as much as possible. But if it has, then at least we should have some alternative source to counter the story the mind is telling us. Ultimately, everything that the mind is telling us one version of the reality. It's not necessarily a reality. It's just one version. One version of how things might be. And often it's a false version. So if we get the alternative version, then we can be saved. Now Krishna tells over here. So, yes, Prabhu.
Is the mind, when he says uncomfortable, when you try to control it, and you find it,
Good question. Krishna says in the 10th chapter, Indriyanam manascha asmi, bhutanam asmi chetana. This is among the senses and the mind. Now, in that Vibhuti Yoga chapter, we'll discuss more elaborately there, but here, Krishna is talking about the principles. He's saying that the best among everything I am. So among animals, mrugaanam, mrugendroham. Among animals, I am the lion. So like that, among the senses, the most powerful is the mind. So in that sense, Krishna is saying that I am the mind. Now, in the Avanti Brahman section, 11th canto, it said that very significant phrase the God-like power of the mind. The God-like power. But actually, the mind is almost as powerful as God. So for those who don't accept God as almighty, the mind becomes almighty. So therefore, you know, our process of controlling the mind is by handing the mind over to Krishna. As we fix the mind on Krishna, and the Krishna controls the mind for us. We can't control it ourselves. Tumi Rishikesh Rishika Damiya Lohoni Japani. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Tumi Rishike, you are the controller and you control my mind. You are the controller of the senses, you control my mind. So basically when we chant, when we engage in service, we actually are trying to hand the control of our mind over to Krishna. So the idea is that if we disobey Krishna, we have to obey the mind. And if we want to disobey the mind, we have to obey Krishna. You know, if we can't stay in a third stage, I will not obey Krishna also, I will not obey the mind also. It is not possible. And to the extent we start obeying Krishna, Krishna and his representative, the spiritual master, the Vaishnavas, we will find that controlling the mind, that the mind troubles us less and less. Of course, Prabhupada also gives another example. He says like a tiger. Sometimes when you make a resolve to control the mind, at that time the mind seems to scream all the more. Suppose you decide, now, say the Kartik is coming, I will not take sweets, or I will take some prasad less, or some, I will do some austerity. I will not sleep in the daytime, or some austerity we decide. And whatever we decide not to do, sometimes the mind just starts screaming more and more about that. So Prabhupada gives a simple example, beautiful example. He says it's like a tiger. You know, all of you know the example. When a trainer in a circus wants to train a tiger, he stops feeding the tiger. And when the tiger is stopped, it's the daily quota of food, the tiger roars louder. And an ordinary person who is not trained, usually the struggle becomes more and more ferocious. Better let me feed it. But the real trick is to understand that the tiger is screaming louder, but it is becoming weaker. So it is becoming weaker. And it may scream louder and louder and louder, but it's losing all its strength. And eventually it will come down to whimper and it will become silent. But that scary technique of the tiger, that trainer should not get affected by that phase when he's just trying to scare. So like that, the mind has a scaring technique. When we try to control the senses, at that time the mind rebels against that all the more powerfully. And during that, it is an intimidating technique. You know, if Kshatriyas are fighting, they say, what can you do? I'll kill you with just one shot of my arrow. So normally that invokes the fighting spirit. But in ours, when the mind starts threatening like that, what happens is, it frightens us instead of invoking our fighting spirit. See, often what happens, suppose there is a boxing match going on. The boxing match is going on and two boxers are fighting. And suddenly one of the boxers, he beats this person. And he falls down. Now if he falls down, you know, he's thinking, you know, will I be able to fight with this boxer? Such a blow he gave me, my mouth is paining also now, terribly. Now, if he looks and asks the other boxer only, will I be able to fight with him? That's what he will say. What he should do is, he should ask the coach, can I fight with him? Yes, you can, get up and do this, this, this. So what happens when the mind knocks us down, we ask the mind only, will I be able to do this? So, we have our own internal dialogue, you know. I tried to wake up early and I couldn't. Can I do it? No, you can never do it. The mind will delight in saying that. The mind takes a fiendish delight, you know, perverse delight in gloating over its success and our failure. So therefore, you know, when the mind knocks us down, we should not consult the mind. We have our own internal dialogue going on. It's mostly the mind speaking to us. So then we consult some devotees, we read Prabhupada's books, we hear our spiritual master lectures, then we get some strength from there. So otherwise we'll get completely, the mind is very good at intimidating. Intimidating means threatening. You cannot do this. It's not possible.
So if we get scared about threatening techniques, then we will never be able to get past it. So that's why we have to gradually transcend that stage of the threats of the mind by getting reassurances from Guru Sadhu Shastra, as the mind can be controlled. Yes, by Krishna's mercy, by our sincere endeavor, we will control the mind. Okay? Yes, yes, ma'am. It is true that ultimately, you know, everybody can find quotes for whatever he wants to do. So it's possible that we may be choosing according to our convenience, but there is also another principle in bhakti, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. So then ultimately it boils down to our sincerity. Now some devotees, they may, if they have a lot of cough problem, they may take not cold water bath but warm water bath, lukewarm water bath in the morning. Now, it is a good principle also to take cold water bath, but it's not absolutely essential. You know, it's more important to be able to chant during the japa time than to take cold water bath and be coughing in the japa time. Isn't it? So, there are higher principles and lower principles. So, generally speaking, we have to use, because as we practice devotional service more and more over the years, now what is anukul and pratikul, all of us will have to choose ourselves. Initially, we have counselor and counselor will guide us. So from the guidance of the counselor, we learn the principles. Okay, this is how I should be choosing. So if we have some doubts, you know, whether I am doing something for, because I am just being lazy, or whether it's because that's what is good for me, then we can always ask. You know, generally, 6 to 6 hours sleep, 6 and a half hours sleep is good enough. Some people may be really sick, and they may need more hours sleep. So then if that is required, you know, if we talk with a doctor, we talk with our devotee guide, we need more rest, we can take more rest. But then, you know, if that becomes a habit, and we'll see later on, Prabhupada says the purport, in Yukta Hara Vihara se purport, you know, a devotee feels that even a little amount of time spent extra on sleeping is a great loss. And Prabhupada says that example, the ideal is like the 6 Goswamis, would sleep so little. And Prabhupada is also there for us. We sleep only 2 to 4 hours at night. So in that sense, our ideals are there, but at the same time, how we move towards the ideals, all of us have to find a practical way to do that. So that requires our sincerity on in the long run, but immediately, generally speaking, in the starting stages of our spiritual life, we need to take guidance from seniors. And then we can always, generally how we learn is, we can tell this, when we go to ask also, we can say our thinking also, this is what I felt, I could do this for this reason, or I could do this for this reason. Please tell me what I should do. And then we can ask the counselor also, you know, what is the reasoning behind deciding this? And that way what happens, Prabhupada said all of us should become independently thoughtful. Not that we become independent, but we become independently thoughtful. Independent means we'll do whatever we want to do. But independently thoughtful means we should be capable of arriving at our own decisions according to Shastra. Now whether we'll implement the decisions according to the ourselves or on the guidance of somebody else, that will depend on time, place, circumstance. And if you are in a department where you are the main person, then you may have to take at least some decisions yourself, and from some major decisions you consult some seniors. But Prabhupada wanted all of us to become independently thoughtful. That means we should be able to, situation that we face in this world, we should be able to deliberate based on Guru Sadhu Shastra and be able to arrive at a perspective. And then by consulting with other devotees, we can understand whether it is correct or it is partially correct or it is incorrect. Okay? Yeah. So now, Prabhuji, you would like to comment something? Okay. So, now Krishna talks about the first time in this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will explicitly use the word Paramatma in the next verse.
In the 6.6 purport, Prabhupada talks about the same principle that what you are asking, that the soul is always a servant. Either he has to serve the super soul or he has to serve kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha. So we cannot avoid the position of service. So it's better to serve a good master than a bad master. So in that sense it's true, we cannot control the mind. But we can let our mind be controlled by Maya or by Krishna. So now Krishna will talk about, if we control the mind, then we can ourselves connect with the super soul.
Chitatmanah prashantasya paramatma samahitaha shitoshna sukha dukheshu tathamanapamanayo.
For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same.
So jitatmanaha, one who has conquered the mind, prashantasya. Krishna used the word prashanta several times in the Bhagavad Gita. Very completely peaceful. Prashantasya. Samahitaha means he is situated in, he is connected with. He is situated in the super soul, connected with the super soul. And Krishna talks about three levels of transcendence of realities over here. Shitoshna, that is physical, sukha dukha is mental. And manapman is egoistic. So progressively each of these dualities are more difficult to tolerate. Now, heat and cold we can tolerate, but honor and dishonor is so difficult to tolerate. So it's progress. So all these three levels of duality, one becomes equipoised among them. And then, what is it that makes him equipoised? Krishna will describe that in the next verse.
Jnana vijnana truptatma kutastho vijitendriyaha yuktaitya uchyate yogi samaloshtashma kanchana.
A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi or mystic when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones or gold, as the same.
So this is the third time Krishna is defining yoga. Yukta itti uchyate yogi. The second chapter defined twice. Samatvam yoga uchyate and yoga karmasu kaushalam. Equanimity is yoga, the art of work is yoga. Krishna reiterates again, yukta, connectedness. What kind of connectedness? The remaining verse describes. So, how is this person able to be equipoised? Because he has some other higher happiness. Truptatma, he is satisfied. How is that? By jnana and vijnana. So, Srila Prabhupada's full purport is about the inadequacy of jnana itself alone and about the necessity of transforming that jnana into vijnana. His bookish knowledge without realization, Prabhupada says, is useless. And it's a very good purport, Prabhupada, especially over the importance of application and service to transform knowledge into realization. So, you know, when we eat food, normally the food transforms into energy and then we feel enthused to work. So, in a normal condition, when we hear philosophy, that philosophy, knowledge should transform into spiritual energy. Yes, when we hear the philosophy, that should inspire us to serve Krishna. So sometimes some people are like bookworms. You know, they sit and read for hours and hours and hours. But actually if you tell them to do some service, they are very, very reluctant to do service. And they are also quite lethargic in their life. So that reading is not the kind of reading that Krishna is encouraging. You know, even if somebody reads a little, but that reading inspires that person to do service. Yes, if somebody has an intellectual propensity and would like to read more, it's good. But actually what happens is, if you are given a lot of time to read, we can't do that. When we don't have time to read, we feel, so much service, so much service, so much service. But actually imagine if you have one full day with nothing to do, no single service, just reading. What will happen is, we'll read for a few hours, then we'll get bored, we'll start talking and we'll try to invent some service. Or if you can't find any service, you always have the default path of least resistance. The path of least resistance. That is, just go to sleep. So, it happens. So that's why, Prabhupada explains over here that actually it is service that uses realization. If one just keeps a reader a lot of things, then one will be bewildered by apparent contradictions that are there. And so, just like Sri Radhakrishna Maharaj says this in a very beautiful lecture. He says, just like there has to be proper enzymes, digestive enzymes in the stomach, that will convert the food by digestion into energy. So he says, service attitude is the enzyme that transforms knowledge into realization. So I have knowledge, but how does it become realization? Only when I have service attitude. That's what actually transforms. So without service attitude, whatever I have, can you write this? Whatever knowledge I have, that is good, but that will not transform into realization. Full you can. All of you have written this? Those who wanted to. So hearing itself could be a full different topic. I'll just take one or two points here about it. When we contemplate, it enters into our head, and when we apply, it enters into our heart. So Krishna says, so at this stage the process of jnana begins when we start hearing with the ears, but when it enters into the heart, then it becomes vijnan. So this is the stage of contemplation, is also called as smaran or nidhyasana. Contemplation, serious contemplation. So now different people, different devotees will have different capacities of contemplation. So one kind of contemplation is more intellectual. You know, okay, how can this be true? Connect this point with that point, and connect this point with this, and try to connect the philosophy in different ways. So this contemplation can be very helpful for preaching. It can also be very helpful for assimilation of the knowledge ourselves, so that we can apply it in our lives. So sometimes we hear, and generally speaking what happens is that many times when we hear, it's the same knowledge we are hearing, but often it just comes here and it goes up. It doesn't go in because we don't contemplate on it. So even if it is familiar, actually just the information is, when we hear, it's not just for information, it's for reminder. It's for reminder so that we can apply. Another very important point is when we, okay, is this clear? Any questions about this? So another very important point is when we hear from very advanced souls, like Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master, or the other spiritual masters, generally speaking, one of the most important things that is transmitted through hearing is consciousness or desire. So, you know, by associating with great Vaishnavas, we get their desire to serve Krishna. So, that information that is given is just the medium. But what is important is the spiritual desire, the energy to serve Krishna, that gets transmitted. Information, purification, satisfaction, realization. So there are some things which we hear new, especially when we are first introduced to Krishna consciousness, we get a lot of information, and that is important because information is also the basis of application and conviction. But along with information, over a period of time, what will happen is that although there is a lot which the acharyas have written, and we can read it if we have the inclination and the time and the blessings to do that, but more important is the application. So when we hear on a regular basis, what happens is if I have a submissive attitude towards hearing, then there are certain points which we know but we don't remember at that particular time, and then we just get it at that time. So actually, what is a realization? Realization means that which is a reality we understand it to be a reality. That is a realization. Simple example. I illustrate what realization means. So this is okay. I'll come to realization a little later. Let me go through, because I want to draw another sketch over here. So the other results is purification. Just hearing Krishna Katha, you know, Prabhupada, he would tell, even when he was giving Hindi classes in India, he would tell his foreign disciples, here. But of course, Prabhupada did not want that all the time. I said many times Prabhupada would prefer to give English classes so that they could understand. So the hearing itself, even if it is repetitive, there is purification, because we are connecting ourselves with Krishna. Now there is satisfaction that comes. The higher satisfaction that comes by hearing, because we all want to develop our love for Krishna, and when we remember Krishna, that leads to satsatisfaction. In fact, in the Bhagavatam 11th canto, it says that the satisfaction that comes from hearing and discussing about Krishna is greater than even the satisfaction when two people sit and discuss about Krishna. That satisfaction is greater than the satisfaction that a man and a woman can have together in sense gratification. So this is an advanced stage, but we can also experience satisfaction different times. So now, talking about this particular point of realization. Any questions about this? You can just drop this. So, yeah? Hearing from a direct person or from the audio, Prabhupada said it is a separated energy, the audio, so in that sense is non-different, but it's always preferable because there is one-to-one reciprocation. Ultimately, you know, if you are sitting in a class, the whole attitude becomes more serious. If there is just a recording we are hearing, we can do other things also. And we tend to do other things also. So if you are sitting right in front of the person, generally our hearing becomes a little more serious. That itself is the one advantage. Another thing is we get to see the person, and the dati pratigranati happens more. Because this spiritual master or the Vaishnava is speaking something, he's offering Krishna, and we are there eagerly receiving Krishna from there. So in that sense, if we have a choice between the two, it's always better to have direct hearing. But if that is not possible, ultimately Krishna sees our sincerity. So if we are sincere, and if we are in a situation where we don't get to hear directly, then we can hear in different ways and we can get benefited. You know, we see many of Srila Prabhupada's most dedicated disciples and the leaders of our movement now are those who never got in much direct association with Prabhupada and never got much direct hearing from Prabhupada also. But it is ultimately, you know, whether we how seriously we hear and how much we apply, that matters. No, it's all of these can happen. Because the same class, we may get tsunami information. We may hear some new examples, new analogies, new shlokas. In the same class, you know, we may hear some very nice pastime of Krishna which gives us satisfaction. In the same class, we may hear some points which are just, you know, some turbulences going on in our mind. And at that time, that's what we need to hear. And then that gives us realization. Yeah, this is how it is. So this, all these can happen in the same, it's not progressive. All these can happen at different times, in the same class or in different classes. Now this hearing, it also applies to reading. By reading also the same things can happen. Now, with respect to realization, something very interesting. In the Uddhav Gita is a very, very intellectually satisfying section. In fact, there, you know, Uddhava asks Krishna about three modes. So at that time Krishna says, you know, Arjuna also asked me about three modes. But that is a battlefield, so I spoke very briefly. Now I will speak in detail. So it's very beautiful. So there, Krishna says something very interesting. He says that there are, generally we talk about Shabda as the authority way of knowing. But he says that Shuti Pratyaksha Maitiheyam Anumaneshva Chatushtayam Pramaneshva Navasthanad Vikalpat Savirajyate. So Vikalpat means all the alternatives for material enjoyment that are there in this world. Virajyate, one becomes detached from all of them. So how does that happen? He says there are four ways it which can happen. Shruti is by hearing from scripture. Pratyaksham, by pratyaksha pramana. Aitiha is historical records. Now there are many stories in every region, culture, tradition about how greed is bad, how a greedy person suffers and dies. So this is folk wisdom, we say. So aitiha. So now there are many stories, even now aitiha can be just in one sense mundane satogoni aitiha, or it can be religious aitiha also. There are many, when we go to Vrindavan, there are many stories about Krishna. Now, they may not be there in the Puranas or in the Goswami literature, but they are accepted, that's true. So, and Anodi also
Rupa Goswami said there are two kinds of pramanas. There is Shastra Pramana, there is Loka Pramana. So, Aitiha. Shuttihi Pratyaksham Aitiham Anumaneshva Chatushtayam. Anuman is Anuman Pramana, reasoning. Chatushtayam, these four are the ways by which one can understand Anavasthana. Anavasthana is insubstantiality of the material world. And one can become detached. So, that means here he is Krishna is telling that Iva Pratyaksha Anuman Aitiha are also valid sources of knowledge. But first is Shruti, first is Shabda. So when we say, I get a realization, what does a realization mean? Now Krishna also says, Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmam. He doesn't recommend Pratyaksha, but Pratyaksha Avagam. This comes in 9.2. That means directly experienced. So, as I said in the beginning, realization means that which is actually a reality, we understand and accept it to be a reality. That is called a realization. So for example, scriptures say that wealth cannot make a person happy. But in our mind has so many comments, wealth can make a person happy. We see somebody, especially if one person is going in a crowded local and the other person is going in an air conditioned car. Wealth can make us happy, isn't it? So the person is so miserable over there. How can wealth not make a person happy? So that's our default mind. But suppose we go to some very big millionaire's house and then see there is a whole fleet of cars outside and there are security and there are a big garden and a huge mansion. Then our mind starts imagining, this person must be enjoying so much. And then you go inside and there is some old man who is 65 years old and he starts talking. Many times these wealthy people, in front of the world they make a big show. But with sadhus they are often quite open. So they tell you, I am all alone in this big house. My wife passed away last year after a very painful blood cancer and my son gone to America and he has never come back and I have not seen him also, and my daughter ran away with some boy, I don't know where he is. This big house is there, I'm all alone, and I know all my relatives are just waiting for me to die to grab my inheritance. And then we said, hey, really, wealth doesn't make a person happy. So what is happening over here? From Shabda we heard that wealth cannot make us happy. Now from Pratyaksha we experience the same thing. So from Pratyaksha, so that means Pratyaksha Avagamam means by Pratyaksha we understand Shabda to be true. Then it is realization. So realization means by Pratyaksha we experience to be a reality that which Shabda is telling us to be a reality. Now there is one more important point over here. Now if somebody is a very materially minded and cunning person, you think, this person, he has nobody. If I just become affectionate to him, show him some love, he may give his inheritance to me and I will get the whole thing. So the whole purpose gets defeated. So then the Pratyaksha is there, the Shabda is there, but the mind's role is Anuman. So what kind, Anuman doesn't necessarily mean speculation. Anuman also means reasoning. Basically the intellectual mental faculty is called Anuman. So When Prabhupada talked about mental speculation and philosophical speculation. So philosophical speculation means when we do our reasoning so as to harmonize the Pratyaksha with Shabda. I'll repeat this. I'll depict it properly so that will be easier. See, from Shabda we hear. So this is a conditioned soul. From Shabda he hears. And the conditioned soul has his subtle body, which is the mind, and then there are external senses over here. So from here Pratyaksha is happening, and from here Shabda is coming from Guru Adi Shastra. So now what we do within is Anuman. So now, when we see from Pratyaksha and we hear from Shabda, so now what kind of Anuman we do? If we do the Anuman that will harmonize our Pratyaksha with Shabda, then that is philosophical speculation. That will give us realization, that will deepen our conviction. Now I'll give some practical examples. Now if you see in Mayapur, Calcutta, that area, there are many young Bengali boys who come to our temples, and they are quite poor, and they feel that ISKCON has very bright prospects. relatively speaking, ISKCON Brahmacharya life is better than their outside life. And you may see, even Western people over there. And when they see Western people, you know, maybe young man, young woman, they may get attracted. You know, oh, if I can marry a young woman, then maybe I can go abroad and I can enjoy. So now what is happening is, they are seeing, now if you see many of us, at least when we take boys on camps, and when they go there, after they have heard sufficient philosophy about the material world, then they go to Mayapur, and then they say devotees from the Western world. They see white body men wearing dhoti kurta, white body women wearing sari. Oh, people all over the world are practicing Krishna consciousness. I think that means really Krishna consciousness must have some substance that will make them happy. So if people all over the world are practicing, let us also practice. So the same pratyaksha is there. We are seeing Western bodied devotees, Western bodied young men and women. But if somebody has got Shabda and he has heard Shabda and assimilated that, then actually the Anuman that we do, yes, it's not only just some Hindu culture, not some the Bengali culture, it's not just some our culture, it's a global principle and everybody can become happy. That's why people all over the world are practicing it. But if one has not heard Shabda, then what happens? The same pratyaksha is there, but somebody says, oh, let me, I can sing nicely, I can play instruments nicely, I attract some woman, get married to her and go abroad. And after becoming abroad, you become maybe a car cleaner over there. You know, so you play music so that one can clean cars in America. It is so sad. So the point that we are seeing here is that actually the way we reason is very important. So that's why philosophical speculation is called the Baldev Vidya Bhushan as Uha. Anuman and Uha means Shastra Mulak Anuman. He also uses a simpler word, that's a little technical, Vichar. So Anuman is just independent reasoning, and Vichar is scripturally harmonized reasoning. So Vichar is contemplation. Now that is very important, especially for brahmacharis, those who are preachers and brahmacharis, for us to be able to contemplate on scripture and see scripture as happening as true in the world. That is very important. So in this way, we don't have to just close our eyes and stop our intelligence. That is not the path of bhakti. That we say pratyaksha and anuman are not proper ways of acquiring knowledge, that doesn't mean that they are entirely useless. No, they have to be subordinated to shabda. So once we are hearing from shabda, then we can see by pratyaksha and anuman. By pratyaksha, we can maybe meet one wealthy person who is miserable, and then we can do anuman. You know, how will other wealthy people be any different from him? Sooner or later, they are also going to get problems. So no wealthy person will be happy. And therefore, wealth cannot make us happy. So therefore, this is how we can use our sensory faculty and our intellectual faculty to strengthen our spiritual convictions. But the crucial thing is that Shabda should be very strong. But if you don't hear Shabda, then what happens? The Pratyaksha, it's not always that Pratyaksha will be harmonious with Shastra. Like sometimes we may see, another example I'll give, say some devotee dies in an accident, a very sad way, you know, some terrible way somebody passes away. Then now, pratyaksha in this world is never final. Sometimes by pratyaksha we will see some devotee departing in a very glorious way, you know, surrounded by all other devotees and with the spiritual master or other Vaishnavas there praying. Then we can see two great souls, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj died in a very idyllic way. In one sense, you know, surrounded by Vaishnavas, doing Krishna Katha, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj, from the external point of view, it was just a road accident. Of course, if you look at it deeper, it was in Mayapur Dham, it was Brahma Murta, he was chanting, it was near Hridas Thakur's area, Phulia Gram, so it was auspicious, but still, it was an accident. So now what happens is, Pratyaksha is never authoritative, and Pratyaksha will sometimes help enhance our faith, sometimes dampen our faith. Therefore, we always need Shastra, Shabda, to interpret the Pratyaksha. So it is actually, if pratyaksha enhances our faith, then that is only by the grace of the Vaishnavas and the Acharyas. Right? This world's pratyaksha is meant to take us away from Krishna only, primarily speaking. So, but you know, by Prabhupada's mercy, by Prabhupada's disciples' mercy, you know, we have a place like, say, Radha Gopinath Temple or Mayapur Dham, where we can actually personally experience the spiritual potency. We can experience the joy of Krishna consciousness. So, the pratyaksha where we can experience Shabda to be true, that is the reliable pratyaksha. But in general, pratyaksha will not always support our scriptural understanding. Because, generally speaking, we don't see materialistic people always miserable. At first glance, materialistic people seem to be happy. Now, if there was a survey done in Harvard Medical School, and all these young boys and girls, you know, who have free mixing and they have relationships and all sorts of things, the kind of which is shown in Star TV in India. So they actually did a survey. Now, from the uneducated glance point of view, they appear to be enjoying. But you know, they found that all these boys and girls, they are very depressed and they are haunted by feelings of loneliness and guilt. Why? Because they have physical relationship with so many boys or girls or whatever, but they know nobody cares for me. They know that they are using others and others are using them. So therefore, they are very lonely. They are haunted. This is the precise word that the Harvard Medical School researcher said. They are haunted by feelings of loneliness and guilt. Loneliness because nobody cares for them, and guilt because they know that they are using other people. And similarly, they are being used. So sometimes, you know, just by seeing, we may not feel that people are suffering in material life. But then when we go deeper, then we start seeing how people are actually suffering. In the first class, I told about how, and when I was talking about Kula Dharma Sana, about the fall of Kula Dharma, you know, this is how the statistics, America, if you look at first glance, you know, there are computers and there are skyscrapers and there are fast cars, it looks very comfortable. But socially speaking, American society is in a big crisis. I remember I told several statistics on the first day. I said about how in America, as compared to 1960s, by 2000, the number of divorces have doubled. The number of violent crimes have tripled. Then the prison population has quadrupled. The number of suicides has pentupled. The number of children born out of marriage has sextupled. And the number of depression people has increased 10 times. So where is the happiness? Where is the happiness? But, you know, Pratyaksha itself will not show us this. So then we have to discriminate when we take in Pratyaksha also. So now sometimes, actually, even material life, Pratyaksha and Anuman are not together. But Pratyaksha, it seems that they are happy. But Anuman, you know, they are not happy. Now what is the truth? Is Pratyaksha true or Anuman true? Actually, no. We are Shabda is true, and then we have to use Pratyaksha and Anuman to understand how Shabda is true. So, any questions about this? This is Jnana Vijnana Truptatma. Now, says that actually, this Vijnana happens at different levels. One is, when we do service, automatically the realization comes from within. But I was talking about all this as a second stage. Now, when we apply, that conviction will come without any deep analysis and reasoning also. Even if somebody is not able to do that. But for those of us who are intellectually oriented, this sort of analysis can take the knowledge from the ears to the head. I was talking about contemplation. So in one sense, even when the knowledge enters into our head, that is also one level of vijnana. Because we are intellectually convinced about it. We may not be... Okay, I'll just draw one last thing. Philosophical speculation begins with Shabda. You know, it starts with Shabda and then it harmonizes Pratyaksha. It is Anuman to harmonize Pratyaksha with Shabda. But mental speculation means there is no Shabda involved. One just does some sort of reasoning, which may sometimes be in harmony Shabda by chance. You know, the standard example is that, you know, even a watch that is not working will twice a day show the right time. So, like that, even mundane reasoning, unaided by scripture, may also sometimes come to the right conclusion. But that is rare, and we can't wed our destiny to that. Yeah? Scientists also say, yeah, all the sensory pleasures, they are actually false. Yeah, yesterday I was talking about, you know, for scientists, sex is a big problem, for evolutionists. You know why? Because... it's not that they want to give up the desire for sex, and that's why there's a problem. No, because according to evolution theory, you know, everything is geared for survival, survival of the fittest. And everything that we do is for survival. So now living beings reproduce in two ways. One is sexually, the other is asexually. Some living beings reproduce without sex also. Now if we look at from the survival point of view, asexual reproduction is much safer than sexual. Because when a person has to have sex, any species, they just get so infatuated by that activity and they become blind and deaf to everything else practically. and that makes them very vulnerable to attack by predators. So in that sense, sex is not at all a safe activity. So if survival were the predominating directive within nature, then then nature should have selected asexual reproduction and eliminated sexual reproduction. But not only has nature not eliminated sexual reproduction, but nature has made sex such an overpowering drive. So first, the existence of sex itself is a problem for evolutionary scientists. And secondly, the existence of the overpowering force of sex, that also is a problem. They can't explain that. But so they may say that actually, it's from the evolution point of view wrong. They may say it's wrong, but they like it also. They want to do it so much. So that way, you know, sometimes Anuman may come right also. Is it clear? Yeah. So just one last point before we move ahead. See, when we practice bhakti, there is as I was telling you earlier, if you remember in Evambuddha, in that section of Indriyani Paranyahur, that the intelligence is above the mind. So what that means is that first, first we get intellectual conviction. This comes by hearing. By hearing we get intellectual conviction. And when we get intellectual conviction, we practice devotional service. And then devotional service leads to purification of the mind. It's actually we are going to come to an 6.24. Krishna will talk about this, we'll come to that later, I'll explain it. But how it works is, for example, our mind may still be attracted to sense objects, to sense gratification, but by hearing, if you are convinced Krishna is the only ultimate reality, and with connection with Krishna only I'll become happy, then the intellectual conviction gives us some force to practice devotional service. Yes, I will sit and I will chant Hare Krishna properly, or I will render service to Krishna, keeping my mind within his service. And then when we render devotional service, then the mind becomes purified. So when the mind becomes purified, that means, so at this stage, at the level of intellectual connection, the mind is still going in wrong directions. But we are able to fight it back. So I had mentioned this earlier, at this stage there is clarity. At this stage there is purity. So, when we have intellectual connection, at this stage there is clarity. Clarity means this is right, this is wrong. This is what I should do, I should not do. So at least, although I may not feel like doing it, but at least I have that clarity. And when the purity is there, then there is no attraction to wrong things itself. So as sadhakas, we may not have purity, but at least we should try to have clarity. So that we can choose, maybe even by force, to act in right ways. And that is Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means voluntary force. Vaidhi Bhakti means voluntary force. We force ourselves. Although our mind doesn't feel like it, because we understand it is right, so we do it. Remember from NLM classes that the main inspiration in Vaidhi Bhakti is not the attraction to Krishna, but it is the Vidhi, the instruction of Guru Sadhu Shastra. It's the same point. When we hear, then that Vidhi gives us the impetus. Yes, let me practice this. So it is for my good. Although it may not be to my liking. So I say another example before I this question answer about this. See when we are chanting, if a child is sick, when the child is sick, at that time the mother may take the child to a doctor, and the doctor tells, okay, he has to take this medicine morning, afternoon, evening. Now the mother will not tell the child. The doctor will not tell the child. The doctor will tell the, can you swipe this? The doctor will tell the mother, and then the mother has to make sure that the child takes the medicine. And the mother tells the child the medicine, child just tastes a little, it's so bitter, I don't want it. He starts crying, no, I don't want it. And the mother starts thinking, she is a little weak hearted. Oh, my child is so sweet, why should I make him suffer? If he doesn't want the medicine, let's not trouble him, let him not take the medicine. What will happen by that? The child will never get cured. So, actually, the mother has to be convinced. When the mother is convinced, the mother will force the child to take the medicine. So like this, we have this four things: doctor, medicine, mother, and child. So the doctor is like the guru. The medicine is the holy name. The mother is the intelligence. The child is the mind. So the doctor instructs the mother. So like that, the spiritual master appeals to our intelligence. And then the doctors are always there to make sure the child takes the medicine or not. So like that, the spiritual masters are always there to see whether the child takes Krishna or not. He's not going to sit in front of, we take a vow, I'll chant 16 rounds. But if the spiritual master is not going to sit every day in front of us, let's see whether the child takes 16 rounds or not. So he's not always available. But then, the spiritual master gives classes, gives instructions. He appeals to our intelligence. So that's why the child is going to be restless. Child may not want to take the medicine. But then the mother has to be mature. The mother has to recognize that even if the child doesn't like, I have to give the medicine to my child. So when the mother is convinced about it, then she will force the child. And gradually as the child starts feeling, hey, you know, my stomach was paining earlier, now the pain is going. And maybe this medicine is good. Gradually the child starts growing, the child starts becoming better, he may also start liking the medicine. So when he starts liking the medicine, then there is no struggle. So that is the progressive stage. So at least when the mother is convinced, so when we are talking about mother being convinced, that is clarity. And when my child is convinced, there is purity. There is no struggle only at all. So, but if the mother itself is not convinced, then there is very little hope for the child to ever get cured. If we are ourselves not convinced, why should I chant so much? Maybe a little bit is okay. Sometimes, you know, I should not be so fanatical. I should be balanced. Sometimes when we are balanced, we become very, very loose. So at least our intelligence has to be convinced. And then we can move forward. Yes, true?
Thank you for clarifying so many wonderful concepts here. My question is just related to this clarity only. We do see that many devotees continue in Krishna consciousness for a longer period of time, and they have intellectually convinced that yes, this process is quite perfect. But we do see that seemingly externally they have not offended any, and they themselves also say they have not offended any devotee, but they get blooped. So is it there is in this mechanism something else also coming into picture that also is the reason apart from offenses?
Generally speaking, if some devotee leaves, that is, offenses is one reason. The other is that the externals don't always relate with the internals. See, Jiva Goswami talks about something very frightening in the Krishna, I think in the Krishna Sandarbha, one of the Sandarbhas. He talks about fall down by chanting Hare Krishna. What he says is that, it's an elaborate process, I won't go into all of it right now, but what he says is that like we say that phalena parichayate. Now, if a devotee is potent, he should be able to see the fruits. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, we can know Vaishnava by how many Vaishnavas he has made. So, in one sense, the phala is the manifestation of the heart state. If a devotee is preaching very nicely, doing nice services, and doing a lot of projects, that, normally speaking, would be indication of a vibrant Krishna consciousness internally also. But in some situations, normally speaking, how it should be, because we are happy in Krishna consciousness, we want to share Krishna consciousness with others. And that's why we preach. That is like Prabhupada's single example. Why do you want to preach? Prabhupada says, Prabhupada is a very simple down-to-earth example. He says, suppose, you know, you were sick for a very long time. And you tried, you suffered a lot, you did not, no medicine worked for you. And now you have found a medicine that works. Now if you see somebody else who is suffering from the same sickness and doesn't know the medicine, will you not want to give the medicine to him? So you say, isn't that natural? So Prabhupada says, simply, you know, we have suffered because of our uncontrolled mind and senses. Now we have found that there is a way to control it. So we want to share with others. So when we are ourselves happy with Krishna consciousness, we want to share that with others. So that is the normal motivation for Krishna consciousness. But sometimes we may substitute the lack of inner satisfaction with external achievement. Normally, external achievement should grow from inner satisfaction. Because I am happy, so I want to preach, so I want to write, so I want to do projects, and so I want to share Krishna consciousness with others. But in some situations, the external achievement becomes a substitute for inner satisfaction. And I get satisfaction only from the external achievement. You know, that means when I sing, it's not that I'm singing about Krishna that gives me satisfaction. So how many people appreciate my singing? That's the only thing that gives me satisfaction. So yes, now we have the conditioned ego, and we may like it when others appreciate us. Nothing wrong with that. But if that is our only motivation, and we don't like to sing at all if nobody is there, sorry about that, you know, then what happens is, then there is only the external motivation is the substitute for internal satisfaction. Like we see, I mean, again, Radha Maharaj, he was singing all alone in Vrindavan, there's nobody to hear. Singing simply for Krishna's pleasure. And now, when thousands of people are falling asleep, now also he's singing. So that there he was so satisfied that now the external public activity of singing, leading kirtan, is just an outgrowth of the inner satisfaction that he had personally. But sometimes, especially for those who are professional singers, their whole motivation for singing is no bhakti. It is just to get the appreciation, the wealth and other things. So if external, so sometimes some devotees may appear to be very successful externally. But it may happen that because of some lack of inner determinations, because of lulls and strong conditioning, which they are not fighting off, you know, they are not actually winning the inner battles. And the inability to win the inner battles, they are hiding it by doing a lot of external things. So if external achievement becomes a substitute for inner fulfillment, then that cannot last for very long. Because eventually what will happen is, the external achievement will not satisfy. Because how it happens is, basically when we want glorification for what we do, it's like my Prabhupada disciple was telling that, you know, when we want glorification, lot of glorification for what we are doing, and basically that is the mood of being an enjoyer, being a king. Now, there are kings, so many servants who are, so many courtiers and others are praising the king. So when we develop the kingly mood, then soon we will also want the queen. And then, you know, it won't just stay external achievements, some other things will also start manifesting. So that's why external achievements are good, but they should grow as a result of inner satisfaction. Or if we are not feeling so internally satisfied, then at least our spiritual advancement should be both ways. We should also be fighting our inner battles and trying to win the inner battles, and also we fight the external battles. See, it's not that we have to get inner satisfaction, only then after all we can do external achievement. No, but it should not be like somebody is doing huge services and is not waking up in the morning, not doing sadhana, somehow struggling to complete the rounds and not attending classes, and is not doing anything to develop the inner substance also. So occasionally it is okay because of the project's requirements will be there. But if all of one's efforts are only in the external achievement direction and there are no efforts in the internal achievement direction, then that can be very injurious in the long run. So our efforts have to be distributed. You know, if we focus only on internal achievement, we will think bhakti is too difficult. I can't do it only. So, you know, we can't sit and chant 64 rounds every day. Even one day in a fortnight is difficult. So, but at least 16 rounds which we have to do in the morning, we do it nicely. So in that sense, we can balance. Of course, now I'm speaking all these things. I myself a struggling sadhaka. And I have many anarthas to overcome. So, but hopefully by speaking things like this to sincere Vaishnavas, I will attract Krishna's mercy. And I'll also be able to apply what I'm speaking. Okay. So we'll move forward.
Wait, one small doubt.
Yeah.
The difference between service attitude and service is what?
Difference between service attitude and service is basically two things. One is that, one is if you are very attached to a particular service, then the service attitude may be slightly deficient. Because that means, you know, it's I do it because I like to do, not because I want to serve somebody. I do that activity because I like to do. So that is the first difference. And the second difference is that whether we are actually, after we do the service, do we pass the glory to Krishna and the Vaishnavas, or whether we delight in the glory. Because in one sense, although we say service, you know, as we practice the ocean service, we also get positions and we get posts, and then we get glorification also from that. So then, how do we know whether it is actually a service or not? Because it doesn't externally look like a service. Isn't it? So, meditation, it looks like very much like controlling, getting people to do things what we want to do. So how do we know that it's a service? Whether we are delighting in the crate, or you're sharing and passing the credit to others. So the two things, willingness to do different kinds of services and the readiness to share the glory with others. Hari Bol. Yes, bro. Okay, good question. Now, what about reasoning and faith? Now, as I told yesterday, faith is both a matter of choice and a matter of grace. Just like lifting weights, it's a matter of choice. When I keep lifting weights, my muscle will increase. So, there are activities which enhance faith. And if I keep doing those activities, the faith will eventually increase. So, reasoning is one of those activities. Because ultimately, engaging in Krishna's service means engaging Krishna's service with all our faculties. So the intellect is also one faculty. In the last, in the conclusion, the Phalashruti of the Bhagavad Gita, in 18.70, Krishna will tell that studying my message is also worshipping me with the intelligence. So Krishna doesn't say just serving me, it is worshipping me. So the reasoning is also a way of serving Krishna. Reasoning is also a way of serving Krishna because we are using our intellect for what purpose? To deepen our conviction so that we can serve Krishna more. So that's why I said sometimes our reasoning may take us towards Krishna and sometimes our reasoning may take us away from Krishna. So if we take it, it is taking us away, we reject that reasoning because it's anukul, it's pratikul. And whenever reasoning takes us towards Krishna, we use it in Krishna's service. So this is, so actually ultimately purity is a result of faith. So I would say faith comes in, and you said clarity comes, may come by our own reasoning and analysis, but purity will come by Krishna's mercy. Because when we do devotional service also, it's not automatic that purification comes. It is by Krishna's mercy that purification comes. So it's grace. So it's similar with planning. Sometimes we say that, you know, if you want to make Krishna laugh, tell him your plans. That is true in one sense that we want to surrender to Krishna ultimately. But still, you know, planning is an expression of our seriousness. Now all of you are doing such a big project. You already have plans. So generally, planning is an expression of our seriousness. So, for example, if somebody says, you know, I give class without preparation. Now, that could be a result of very great advancement, or that could just be because of irresponsibility. We are lazy because I don't want to prepare only. So, if you are preparing something or planning something, that is the expression of our seriousness. So, in that sense, planning is not pratikul to the principle of devotional service. But after planning, if things don't work out, that is our surrender. So, that way, planning is important. So, same way with reasoning. Because planning is also a faculty of the intellect. Reasoning is also a faculty of intellect. So now Krishna will talk about further. He has talked about equal vision. He said, what is yoga? It is equality of vision. So now he'll talk about equality with people. Next verse. So equality with things was talked about in this vision. What? So here one beautiful point. Some loshtrashma kanchena. Prabhupada in the purport says that very beautifully handled this. Basically it means that he sees gold and pebbles and stone equally. So Prabhupada brilliantly says in the purport that for some people, mundane scholarship is like gold. But for a devotee, it is like stones and pebbles. So it doesn't value it at all. Because it cannot lead to, it cannot give on Krishna. Now, he will talk about equality, equal vision towards people. Suhrun mitrarya udasina madhyastha dvesha bandhushu sadhushva picha papeshu samabuddhir vishishyate. So here, this verse seems to be similar to Vidyavinaya Sampanna, 5.18. But there's a difference. Here, he's talking, there is just the person, sage, who is observing, those people, they have no relationship with him. But this is, they are all related with him. Some are his friends, some are his enemies, some are his mediators, but still he has equal vision towards them. So in that sense, this is talking about realization, higher than the realization he's talked about over there. So now, after describing, so Krishna, in one sense, does a sort of, in this chapter, how he does is, he talks about sadhana, he takes us to siddha level, again he comes down to sadhana. Then takes us to siddha level, again comes down to sadhana, again takes us to siddha level. So, he alternates these two, so that the siddha doesn't appear too lofty for us, and we don't get too much into our head high up. So, he does that alternatingly. So, So now Krishna will again start with the sadhana stage. Yogi yunjita satatam atmanam rahasi sthita ekaki yata chittatma nirashira parigraha.
A transcendental should always engage his body, mind and self in relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness.
So here is describing the beginning stages of yoga. There is yama, niyama, asana, pranayama. So aparigraha is one of the yamas. We'll just discuss them a little later. We'll come to the yamas. Now also what Krishna is telling is ekaki. One stays alone. So the path of yoga and the path of jnana, generally they are done in isolation. One does individual sadhana. The yogis may sometimes meet together. Jnanis rarely meet. They are even more isolated. And Krishna will talk about this in the 13th chapter again when he is talking about the symptoms of knowledge. There is his rahasi sthita. What is that verse? Vivikta desha savitram aratir jana samsadi. One likes to say in a secluded place. But Prabhupada explains in the Shobhari pastime that one may be, Shobhari was completely alone. But still he fell. So Prabhupada says, even if one is alone, one is still with one's mind. And that is being worse than with one's own enemy. Therefore, being alone was not safe. Unless one is in the protection of devotees. So now Krishna will describe further the process. So first he said he sits alone. Then he says, Shuchau deshe pratishthapya sthiram asanam atmanah nati uchritam nati nicham chailajina kushottaram tatraikagram mana kritva yata chitte indriya kriya upavishyasane yunjat yogam atma vishuddhaye.
To practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place and should lay kusa grass on the ground and then cover it with a deer skin and a soft cloth. The seat should be neither too high nor too low and should be situated in a sacred place. The yogi should then sit on it very firmly and practice yoga to purify the heart by controlling his mind, senses and activities and fixing the mind on one point.
Yeah, sorry. So now, Krishna is talking about further. Shucha Udeshi, one goes to jungle and stays. And some very practical details Krishna has given. Nati uchritam, nati jinam. Don't sit on a too high asana or too low asana. So why? If it's too low, then all the other small worms and others will come and disturb. If you're too high, if you go into trance, you'll fall down. Because whether the trance is samadhi or sapna, we don't know. So, and then kushottaram, chaila ajin, it's a deer skin. Now deer skin has a property that it dries away snakes. So deer don't drive snakes, but deer skin drives snakes. That's why I sit on a deer skin. And further is described that upavishyasane yunjad yogam atma vishuddhaye. The primary purpose is purification. So one sits down for purification. And in the next verse, Krishna will describe this process further and he will take it to the perfection. Tatraikagram, what is that? Samam kaya shiro grivam dharayana chalam sthiraha samprekshanasikagram swam dishaschanavalokayan prashantatma vigatabhi brahmachari vratesthitaha mansanyam yamachitto yuktasitamatparaha.
One should hold one's body, neck and head erect in straight line and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life.
Yeah, so very clearly now you see, Krishna is the ultimate goal of it all. So the whole process of dhyan may begin with nasika gramsom. You begin with focusing on the tip of the nose, but that is not the end. That is only the beginning. Ultimately, the focus has to shift inwards to the Lord in that. Yukta asita matpara. This is the same phrase in 2.61, which came again over here. So now, here is the first time Krishna talks about brahmacharya. Brahmachari vratesthitaha. In the Bhagavad Gita, that was 4.26, Shrotradhi Nindyananya, but that is not explicitly referring to brahmacharya. the word brahmacharya comes for the first time in the Bhagavad Gita over here. It will come again in 8.11. And Prabhupada very strongly emphasizes that. Now, these are preliminaries of brahmacharya is a part of the yama and niyama. Without that, asana and pranayama can't be of much help as pathways to spiritual realization. They may be of some help for or health benefits, but that is not the ultimate purpose of yoga. So, in the West, yoga has become immensely popular. You know, almost like 1 out of every 10 Americans practices yoga, and there are 30 million Americans who are registered yoga practitioners. Yoga itself is a huge industry. You know, the financial assets connected with the yoga industry are equivalent to the baseball industry in America. And baseball is the most popular sport in America. So it's huge. So there are, and especially in other countries also, yoga is also very popular. But you know what has happened, there were many different teachers from India went to America to teach, and initially most of the teachers wanted to give a spiritual message, but over a period of time they felt that Americans are not ready for a spiritual message. So they said, let us give some material benefits, give some mundane benefits first, and eventually they will come to the spiritual level. So that's how they started introducing yoga in a very wide way, without talking about the yama and niyama. They started asana and pranayama, they started introducing. And what happened, see, the mentality of the speciality of the conditioned soul is, he can take something entirely spiritual and make it entirely material. Entirely spiritual. And he can make it entirely material. Once some of my relatives came to, and I was in Juhu temple, and I had come for some seminars over there, so I was staying in one of the guest rooms over there. So some of my relatives came to meet over there, and they came to meet, and then they went back, and there they told, you know, we saw that in the room that you are staying, the furniture was so good, we are taking a loan to purchase furniture like that. So you come to the temple, not to be Rama Rajvayari, to see the furniture and take a loan to purchase. It's so sad. So, what happened was, whatever might have been the intentions of those spiritual teachers, that they thought, okay, first let us give their health benefits and later we'll give them spiritual benefits. But what has happened, people just took the health benefits. They have completely given up the spiritual aspect at all. In fact, you know, one of the most popular reasons for practicing yoga is yoga for sex. Yoga to shape one's body, to increase one's sexual appeal, yoga to increase one's sexual potency. It's a very popular form of yoga. In fact, there is one, in Lonavala, there is one yoga research institute. They are very faithful, these people, to Patanjali. So the director, I had gone to a conference where the director was also there. So we were talking after that. So he was telling that they are now going to the different parts of India where original yoga literature manuscripts are there. And they are trying to preserve it and present to the world what is original yoga. Because now one of the most perverted forms of yoga is called as doga. Now what is doga? Yoga for dogs. So if I, no seriously, you know, if you go on Google and search, you'll find hundreds of hits for doga. So what is it? You want to do yogasana but you have pet dog. What does the pet dog do? Do yogasana with him also. The make him also stretch his paws, make it also move its tail, make it move his mouth and do some breathing. It's so stupid. But they become completely perverted. So, and the real problem with this is, see, just like you know, Prabhupada would often criticize those spiritual teachers who don't talk about surrender to Krishna. Just talk about some diluted form of religion. Now somebody may say that actually, you know, at least people are being religious. You know, like they do Bhagavad Katha for entertainment. And you know, there is one organization, their guru comes into Bhagavad Katha, and how the Bhagavad Katha is, you know, at the end of the Bhagavad Katha, there will be chairs for everyone to sit. And when you leave the Bhagavad Katha, the chair is yours. You can take the chair back with you. So that is a gift. Gift for coming for the Katha. So people come not for the Katha, but for the chair. And then, the discourse either giving prasadam, they should also start adding prasadam. But you know, they can't cook prasadam like us. So, as an incentive, the plate in which you are served, the plate is also yours. So, they actually do that. Now, some people may say, at least they are coming to hear Bhagavad. It's good. Even if they want chair and plate, they are at least coming to hear Bhagavad. It's good. But the problem is, you may say it's good, but they think This is a substitute for the real Bhagavatam. You know, I am going there and hear Bhagavatam, why should I hear with you? So many days people will say, come, I have my own guru. And my guru, they will show your guru. This is my guru. Now, but actually, what is the relationship with the guru? How he became the guru after Bhagavad Katha? You know, how some gurus who initiate like that. What they do? After the Bhagavad Katha, they will come and dip the speaker's legs in water. And then, just sprinkle the water. Whoever is fortunate enough to have the drops fall on his head, he has become a disciple. It's such a flagrant insult to the whole conception of guru and disciple. Now even if you don't get drops, people complain, I got the drop, I've become a disciple now. So they have no surrender, no guidance, no commitment. And they claim, yes, I am a guru. I have my guru. So then what happens? So because of these, now we may say this is not harmful. They are not doing sense gratification, at least in Bhagavata. But what happens? For the uninformed people, their diluted version of spirituality becomes a substitute for the real, and that becomes a justification for not being the real. So similarly, what is happening? Why Prabhupada is so strongly critical of yoga? Because people think we are practicing yoga, but they are basically doing it for health. And while doing it for health, they are not showing, no spiritual commitment is there, no transformation is there. But they think I am also following a spiritual path, so there is no need for me to take up any commitment spiritual path. So we will see in this purport, Prabhupada writes that, no, one cannot have sex every day, morning and evening, and practice yoga in the middle. Prabhupada is very blunt. So, brahmachari vritti sthita. So, this is one of the primary yamas of yoga. So, basically, now quick information. Patanjali himself was a Vaishnava. According to the Sri Vaishnava tradition, Patanjali was an incarnation of Shesha. So, now he, in the Yoga Sutra is not very big. It's only a few hundred verses. Very small, but in that he basically used techniques and principles. One of the techniques is Ishwar Panidhan, but Patanjali doesn't tell who is the Ishwar. So therefore, in the Yoga Sutra is written assuming that people know the background information. So it is written in a culture where people knew who is the Ishwar and whom we have to surrender to. But when people take Patanjali Yoga Sutra out of the culture, they say actually it has nothing to do with spirituality. So there's one Indian guru who went to America. And he said, yoga's benefits are so great. So, why should atheists be deprived of the benefit of yoga? Therefore, he wrote a book, series of books, Yoga for Atheists. Enlightenment without God. And now this is the antithesis. You know, what kind of enlightenment can one have without God? The purpose of yoga is to connect with God. And he said, yoga without God, Yoga for Atheists. So it has led to a lot of unfortunate consequences. But Patanjali, now he talks many places about, Prabhupada will talk in the Samadhi verses, about how there is activity at the spiritual level, when all material activity has stopped. That indicates spiritual activity. He will talk also about Samadhi, about surrender. Ishwar Panidhan is surrender. So now unless there is a person, how can there be surrender? So that way it is very personal. Now just a quick overview of that. I will not go into the analysis, but the Yamas are five. You know, Ahimsa, Satyam, Asteya, Brahmacharya and Aparigraha. So Krishna talked about two over here. Brahmacharya and Aparigraha. And Patanjali also says each of these leads to fruits. Now if one practices Ahimsa, very beautiful fruits he says. If one practices Ahimsa sincerely, he says others will give up Himsa to you. If you truly practice Ahimsa, others will give up Himsa to you. Similarly he says, if you practice always speaking Satya, your words will become Satya. So your words will become Satya. It's whatever you speak, just like Krishna says, I will fulfill the words of my devotee. So if we speak Satya, whatever you speak will become Satya. Similarly, if Asteya, so Ahimsa, Satyam, Asteya. Asteya means not stealing, not grabbing others' property. So if one does Asteya, he says true wealth will come to you. If you don't steal others' wealth, so he says whatever you give up, that will come back to you. That's the spirit. Then he says, if one practices Brahmacharya, so one requires power to practice Brahmacharya. But if one practices Brahmacharya, one will get further power by that. And similarly, if one practices aparigraha, if one practices non-possessiveness, which Krishna talked about over there, aparigraha, he says, what will happen by that? You will get insight into the working of the law of karma. Very insight, interesting, he says. How the law of karma is working, how things cause entanglement, that I will understand by practicing the yama. So these are the five, and to some extent we practice this in our Ramachari life also. Ahimsa, Satyam, Asteya. So Ahimsa we practice no meat eating. Satyam is no gambling. Then Brahmacharyam is no illicit sex. And then what is remaining? No intoxication. no smoking, no intoxicating, no gambling, no illicit sex, and no meat eating. Yeah, gambling is basically asteya. Asteya parigraha both come, because both are, gambling is connected with wealth. So asteya and parigraha are connected with this. So that way, we have this. Now the niyama are also five. So yama is what we should not do, niyama is what we should do. So shaucha santosha tapa swadhyaya ishwar pranidhana is this. Shaucha santosha tapa swadhyaya ishwar pranidhana. These five are the niyamas. And he says, by cleanliness, what will happen? One will, by shaucha, what happens, he says, is that one becomes, the more one maintains one's body clean, the more one becomes detached from the body. Very interesting. How it happens? The more we maintain the body clean, more we try to maintain the body clean, the more we realize how unclean it is. The more we realize how unclean it is, we become detached from the body. So shaucha, then santosha, this is if one is satisfied, by satisfaction at the material level, one will experience spiritual happiness. Santosha at the material level will give sukha at the spiritual level. Then tapa, shaucha, santosha, tapa, swadhyaya and ishwar pranidhan. By tapa, what will happen is that one will get yogic siddhis, which we don't want, but one will get. And swadhyaya, that will help us to connect with God. Swadhyaya will help us to connect with God. So, that means, you know, even when a yogi is practicing yoga, also he has to do swadhyaya, he has to study. And lastly, he says, Ishwara Pranidhan. What will that lead to? Samadhi. So, you see clearly what Patanjali is saying is, Ishwara Pranidhan is just saying one of the limbs of one item of Ashtanga Yoga. But he's saying that just by this one limb of Yama, of Niyama, one will get the fruit. You know, in the 8th year, the last is Samadhi. So, if one just surrender to Ishwara Pranidhan, one will attain Samadhi. So in this way he talks about these different fruits. So here Krishna talks about himself as the ultimate goal. Same point. Yukta asita matparaha. So he has to ultimately fix his mind on himself. And then Krishna will talk about the same goal in the next verse. Yunjanevam sagatmanam yoginiyatamanasaha shantim nirvana parama matsamthamadigachati.
Thus practicing constant control of the body, mind and activities, the mystic transcendentalist, his mind regulated, attains to the kingdom of God or the abode of Krishna, the essence of material existence.
So now, if you remember chapter overview which I had done, I had said this refers to realization of Brahman. So Vishwanatha Thakur explains that although this yogi is fixing his mind on Krishna, he is not surrendering to Krishna as the eternal Lord. He is seeing that Krishna as a focus of concentration, as an object of meditation to attain Brahman. So if that is his desire, Krishna says, Yathama Brahman, that's what he will attain. So he will enter Brahman as the ultimate goal of his meditation. But the point he makes is that one has to practice bhakti for attaining success by any method. Even when one wants success in yoga and one wants an impersonal success in yoga, one wants to merge into Brahman, then one has to actually fix the mind in Krishna, which is the form of bhakti. So this is actually Brahmavad. What is Mayavad we will discuss later when we come in 9th chapter. In 7th chapter, 7.24 we will discuss that. But from another point of view, Krishna is saying see, Brahmavad means one wants to merge in Brahman. That is Brahmavad basically. So one doesn't know about Bhagavan, one is not offensive to Bhagavan. One doesn't think that Bhagavan's form is temporary and material. One just thinks that I am attracted to Brahman, let me merge in Brahman. So Prabhupada explains in one CC purport that when the yogis they fix their dhyan on the Paramatma. So at that stage they have two options. One option is they think I am that Paramatma and they want to merge. If they think I am that Paramatma and I want to merge, then they will go to Brahman. But if they understand that I am the servant of that Paramatma, then they will go to the spiritual world, most likely in Dasyaras, where they will become trees in Vaikuntha. So they have this both options. So Krishna is here talking about the first option. So he's fixing the mind of the Paramatma, Yukta Asita Matpara, but Mat Samsthamadi Gachati. So he will attain into me. Now, of course, this verse can also refer to having developing a personal relationship with Krishna. And that Krishna will elaborate further in the next few verses. So now Krishna will again come down to the sadhana level. So Krishna is doing this oscillation. perfection and perfection and practice. So we'll just take this 1 5-hour section, then we'll stop. It'll take a few minutes. Where were we? Yeah. Natyashnatastu yogosti na chaikantam anashnataha na chati sapna shilasya jagrito naiva charjuna. Who is reading? Quickly, quickly. Anyway.
There is no possibility of one's becoming a yogi. Oh Arjun, if one eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or does not sleep enough.
So anyway, we'll come to this. So Krishna is talking about regulation over here in this verse and the next verse. So even a yogi, he says, not only should one not sleep too much, but one should not sleep too little also. Too little can also create a problem. What did Prabhupada say? Sleep too much, you become lazy and crazy. So, yuktahara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu, yukta swapnava bodhasya, yoga bhavati dukkha.
He who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, meditation and work can mitigate all mental strain by practicing the yoga system.
So, Krishna is saying that the yoga system will mitigate the misery, but for the yoga system to work, one has to be regulated. So regulation is a sign of goodness, and the yoga will take one to transcendence. But if I am not in goodness, then to go to transcendence becomes more difficult. Therefore yukta is regulated. Then Krishna will talk now further how yoga bhavati dukkha will happen. That will be expanded in the next verses. What is the qualification for that and how it will actually happen. Yada viniyatam chittam atmanyeva vatishthate nispruhas sarva kamebhyo yukta itya uchyate tada.
And the yogi, by practice of yoga, disciplines his mental activity and becomes situated in transcendence, devoid of all material desires. He is said to be well established in yoga.
So, again Krishna is saying, yukta. Who is yukta? One who is free from desires and fixed on the soul. Now, how that fixation is there, that Krishna will illustrate with the example in the next verse. Yatha dipo nivatastho nengate sopamasmuta yogino yata chittasya yunjato yoga matmanah.
There is a lamp in a windless place,
doesn't wear out. So the transcendent,
his mind is controlled, remains always steady in meditation and
transcendence. Yes. So, Krishna has a very simple example. Now, if there is a lot of wind, the lamp will shake, it will extinguish also. So the wind refers to material desires. For a yogi has no material desire, so his consciousness is fixed on the self. He's not talking about a super soul over here. He's talking about self. It's fixed on the self. So I am the Atma, aham Brahmasmi. It's fixed in that.
Here, the transcendentalist, here the yogi, is he meditating on Paramatma or is he thinking something that I am different from... What is the conception here?
Yeah. So, here Krishna is, again, as in this particular verse when he's talking about, he has gone to the perfection in the 14-15 verses. The ultimate object of yoga is focus on Krishna. But here Krishna, when he is talking about a sequence again, so he says like a going up, coming down and starting again. So here Krishna is not identified. Just the point he is saying is fixed. He is not thinking of anything external. He is fixing the mind on Atma. His consciousness is fixed on the Atma. So of course that is actually possible only with bhakti. Only a fixing on the mind on Krishna can the mind become unshaken like that. But Krishna will reveal that second time again in the very clearly in the verses 27-29, that verses 29-32, he will those four verses, he will reveal that very explicitly, that he is the highest goal, and of course 47th verse he will reveal, but here he has not explicitly revealed it.
Otherwise too, generally the yogi is just meditate on,
they start on, see how it is. Okay, now there is dhyan, dharana and samadhi. So basically dhyan means I don't remember the exact time. So it's like, you know, for a particular amount of time, if one is able to meditate, that's called dhyan. Mind fixed on that. If more than that time is there, it's called dharana. And if constant unbreakable meditation is there, it's called samadhi. So that means from fixing the mind on the nose, the consciousness starts going inward towards the super soul. So when one starts shutting out the externals, that is pratyahara. And then from dhyan, one starts seeing inwards. So one starts getting glimpses of the super soul within. So then, at least what Krishna is talking about is the negative part. One is shutting out everything external. So these two examples are these two verses are primarily at the level of pratyahar, that he shut out everything else, and then the dhyan, dharana, samadhi, all of them will be described in the next verse. So we'll just discuss this and we'll stop after this.
Yatra paramate chittam viruddham yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashyanatmani tushyati sukhamatyantikam yattad buddhi grahya matindriyam vetti yatra na chaivayam sthitashchalati tatvatah yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadikam tatah yasmin sthito na dukhena gurunapi vichalyate tam vidya dukkha sanyogam vyogam yoga sangitam.
In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never second, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact.
So, yatra uparamayate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya. So, we are talking about this stage which in yoga is called niruddha. Viruddha means conquered. So, Patanjali describes that the mind passes through these different stages as one progresses in the yoga stage. So, first is the mood. Mood is a completely deluded stage. That is, kshipta is disturbed. Look, running here, running there. So, mood means one is sleeping or lazy or lethargic. The mind is inactive because of the mood of ignorance. And kshipta is partially in passion, partially in ignorance. But even passion, there is some focus. Now, one wants some strong desire is there. But mudha means deluded, kshipta means disturbed, vikshipta is distracted. Distracted means one is trying to concentrate, but one is distracted. This is deluded, this is disturbed. The deluded obviously is just bewildered, completely lazy. You remember, some people wonder what happened. So like that, you don't understand what is happening. And this is concentrated, ekagra, and this is controlled or conquered.
So Krishna is talking about this higher stage. Tra uparamate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya. Niruddha, conquered.
So this is mode of ignorance, this is mode of passion, empty. Mode of goodness is ekagrata. And niruddha is transcendent. Now, by the systematic practice of yoga, one can move forwards. Now, Patanjali says that these first two stages are completely useless for the practice of yoga. One cannot do any yoga. Even if one sits in asana, one cannot do anything because one will fall asleep or one will just think of hundreds of things. Actually, this applies to our chanting also. We cannot really chant if we are too sleepy or our mind is wandering here and there. So he says that yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, all these are meant to bring the mind to at least this stage, vikshipta stage. And from vikshipta upwards towards ekagrata. So as devotees, we generally don't need to practice yoga to come to this, but sometimes the mind is very disturbed, it's just deep breathing. Because what happens, the breathing is very strongly connected with the mind. So just the act, when we are angry, our breath automatically becomes fast. So when we are agitated, you know, if you just forcibly slow down the breathing and do deep breathing, that also pacifies the mind. Sometimes you can use these techniques to come to goodness. Not as a separate sadhana, but occasionally we can use it. So it says, yamayam, asana, pranayam, and pratyahar, they bring one to at least the state of vikshipta. And then the whole internal work starts. The internal work cannot happen before this. So, now, there are a few more terms which are there with respect to this. So should we continue this discussion after the break? Because it's already a little time. Okay. So this Krishna will talk about the samadhi and how these verses apply to the stage of perfection in bhakti. So we will discuss this in the afternoon class. We will continue that. I think because there are very beautiful points, you know, about this, how this samadhi verses apply to Krishna and Vrindavan also. The gopis contemplating Krishna and Vrindavan. So
it's an elaborate subject. We'll discuss it. Yeah? We'll continue it after the class. So here Krishna has come to the level of samadhi and he has talked about sukham atyantikam yatada, ultimate happiness he will get. So what is that ultimate happiness? That Chakravarti Pada explains very beautifully, and that we'll discuss in the afternoon class. Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki jaya, Shri Prabhupada ki jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vinda ki jaya, Gaur Premanand.
They're recording with the computer.